Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Manoush Zomorodi, the host of WNYC's New Tech City, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. And over the past year, nearly 30 judicial decisions have said bans on gay marriage are unconstitutional. We see gay people on TV shows, and it's no big deal. Remember when Ellen came out on her show, the puppy episode, as it was called? It aired in 1997.
I mean, why can't I just say the truth? I mean, be who I am. I'm 35 years old. I'm so afraid to tell people. I mean, I just... Susan, I'm gay.
It's hard to believe Ellen coming out on a sitcom was such a big deal. So here we are, living in an America where the politics of sexual identity have been largely transformed. But what does this mean for straight people and how they present themselves? James Joseph Dean is Associate Professor of Sociology at Sonoma State University, and he's the author of a new book called Straights, Heterosexuality in a Post-Closeted Culture, and he joins me now. Hi there, James.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for being here. Now, James, you start out in your book explaining that your white, straight, younger brother has a black, gay, male roommate. How does his situation sort of encapsulate what your book is about?
So, right, my brother had just graduated from college, and he started living with a black gay male friend he went to college with. And the interesting part of that anecdote was that my mom had met his roommate several times, but she had never thought that he was gay, the roommate. And so my brother was finally telling her, and she was shocked because she had assumed he was straight, and I think that says two things. One, it says that on one hand, a lot of people, like my mom, think that straight guys and gay guys aren't close friends. They don't live together, and if they do live together, then that might create some questions or suspicions about the straight guy's sexuality. Is he really gay? And I think the other thing is... the differences between how white and black racial dynamics change sexual identity. So that a lot of times I think that black straight men and women get hypersexualized and are viewed as sort of hyper-heterosexual, and whites get viewed as neutral, ideal, not hypersexual.
So I want to ask, for the book, you did in-depth interviews with over 60 straight men and women. And what did you ask them? What were you trying to ascertain?
So what I was trying to figure out was both trying to look at homophobic straight men and women. So I interviewed 30 black straight men, or 30 black straight men and women, and then 30 black or 30 white straight men and women. And what I was trying to ask them was to see the degrees of association or disassociation they would have from gay friends, gay coworkers, gay bars, gay spaces, things that they viewed as gay styles, such as, you know, maybe for straight men being metrosexual, being really stylish, looking like David Beckham. And for straight women, I was trying to see, and I asked them all these kinds of questions, but one of the questions was, had they had a same-sex experience? Would they tell me about a same-sex fantasy that they had had? Would they recount their sexual encounters with you know, a gay man or a lesbian woman? And there were clear differences between straight men and straight women regarding those issues.
And James, like, what I sort of assumed was that it would depend mostly on whatever their age was, whatever generation they came up in, and what part of the country they lived in.
Sure. So I conducted my study in the Northeast. So it is an urban center. The Northeast is more liberal. So I'm in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is more liberal than the South, and I'm sure that conditions what I found. But I would also say that, you know, as you were sort of alluding to at the beginning, right, Ellen came out. We now have Glee, Brokeback Mountain, and tons of movies are, you know, blockbuster movies or art house movies that receive Academy Award nominations. So I think on one hand, there's still regional variations, but on the other hand, we're also all consuming Will and Grace and Glee and Brokeback Mountain. And so that lets Americans, I think, talk in a sort of broad-based way about why they support gay and lesbian marriage or why they have gay lesbian friends and why they're increasingly okay with gay people, you know, being in open relationships or having the right to marry.
But one of the things that you write that I found so interesting was that identifying as straight or making clear that you are straight is often about status. How so?
Right. So I think that's a really good point that I've been trying to get out there. So I think that we too often view straight identity in a simple way, and that people are homophobic or not homophobic. And I tried to analyze variations in being homophobic and being pro-gay. But one of the subtle ways that I think straight men and women maintain an unearned advantage is by coming out or disclosing that they are straight, that they, if they're a guy, that they like women, or if they're a straight woman, that they're married to a man. And the most gay-friendly straight men and women I interviewed wouldn't do that. So they didn't need to disclose to other, you know, gay people or straight people that their partner was of the opposite sex. And they did that to be, you know, in sort of political solidarity with their gay friends, or, you know, they identified with their gay family members so that they wanted to not claim a straight status.
That's a great point. So, listeners, do you see colleagues or new friends sort of signaling whether they are dating or marrying a man or a woman, making it very clear where they stand in terms of their being straight or gay? And how do they do that? Is it a family photo on their desk? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I mean, James, I guess I get a sense that identities can be more in flux these days, that attraction, you know, is more based on the person rather than identifying as just gay or straight.
I mean, I think that's more true for women, whether the women are straight or lesbian or bisexual. You know, the psychologist Lisa Diamond wrote a book called Sexual Fluidity, where she did a longitudinal study looking at around 100 non-heterosexual, lesbian, bisexual, queer-identified women, and they changed their sexual experiences and desires over that 10-year longitudinal period. And I found among, you know, 10 of the 30 straight women I interviewed, they, at least the most gay-friendly straight women, would talk about having kissed other women, having had gone on dates with women, being open to a relationship with a woman. And I think that sexual fluidity and being sort of sexually responsive to the person, whether that person is a man or woman, that still seems more salient for straight women or, you know, non-heterosexual women, less so than the straight men I interviewed.
So, listeners, do you find that at work people signal in sort of subtle ways whether they are gay or heterosexual? Call us and tell us how you know. It's 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I mean, I want to be clear, though, here, James, that there is still homophobia, but is there a sort of softer, less obvious form out there then? If you're saying, you know, it's not like it was in the 60s, but is it in different ways, in ways that even some of us may not even notice?
Right. I think that's one of my main points. So I think that since it's less okay to be publicly homophobic, people can say that maybe they support gay marriage, right? So some of the straight men I interviewed, they would support gay marriage, but they would not be caught dead going into a gay bar just because they felt so threatened by the idea of being around gay men or being possibly taken as gay themselves or being flirted with. At least, 15 out of the 30 straight men fell along those lines. And so I think that's part of the contradictions of today. People are still homophobic, and at the same time, they're also pro-gay. They might be pro-gay marriage. So I think the contradictions are what define, the 90s and 2000s. That's how we're different from the 60s and Stonewall.
Let's take a call from Alex in Brooklyn. Hi, Alex. You're on WNYC.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to address a comment James made earlier about being in solidarity with gay people, and that you're not identifying whether you're straight or not. And I've just been very aware in the last couple of years of people referring to their spouses, whether it's wife or husband, as partner for straight couples. And sometimes I'm straight and I'm married, and I just refer to my wife as my wife, so I guess that's implied in that is that I'm...
You're so old-fashioned, Alex.
anyway, I just wanted to... Do you think it's more politically... Is it more sort of politically correct for me to refer to my wife as my partner, or is that... I don't know. I just throwing that out there.
Great observation. James, what do you think? More people referring to their spouse, wife, husband, whatever, as partner, just sort of, is that in solidarity? Is that more sort of, what does that mean?
Right. So the gay-friendly straight men and women that I talk to who use partner as opposed to their husband or wife, I think they did do it out of political solidarity with their gay friends. And I think that they didn't want to try to signal that they're straight. They didn't feel defensive if someone might have thought they could be possibly gay or possibly not straight. So I do think that courting that ambiguity on one hand really does open up space for non-straight relationships to get recognition. And people do that. At least some of the people that I interviewed do that to signal their inclusivity.
Okay, let's go to Dave.
Although now I've met a lesbian couple, and they refer to each other as their wife, So there's that too. Or male couples will refer to husbands because people are married now. So it's less black and white than even that used to be, I think.
Right. Alex, sorry, I didn't realize you were still there. Thank you so much for your call, Alex. Professor, we may be more accepting culturally, which especially here in New York, but institutionally, the U.S. has not caught up to culture, right?
Sure. I think that's an interesting contradiction. So on one hand, DOMA is dead, yet, the civil right to marry maintains itself as a state-by-state right that has to be recognized. So I think that we have legal protections, but that doesn't mean the workplaces that most people work in are gay-friendly or that inclusive. I think to some extent they have domestic partnerships and domestic partner benefits, and to that extent you can see there's inclusivity in those corporations and major workplaces, government workplaces and so on that do that. But I think that the workplace still tends to be predominantly heterosexual, and that on one level probably a lot of gay men and lesbians situationally try to pass as straight or situationally don't disclose being gay to others. I think that's changing, and that's part of the change. But in my case, I did view it as more of a interpersonal shift that's happening, and more of a cultural media shift, at least since the 90s with Ellen and Will and Grace and now Glee and so on and Modern Family. So I agree, yeah, institutions are lagging behind our culture and you know, everyday life, as in New York City or, you know, the larger Bay Area or, you know, the Midwest and so on. I mean, these are all regions that are more liberal towards gay and men and lesbian women's rights.
So we need to leave it there. James Joseph Dean is the author of the new book that's called Straights, Heterosexuality in Post-Closeted Culture. James, thank you so much for joining us today on The Brian Lehrer Show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me on. It was my pleasure.
Okay, we're going to be back in just a minute with The Approval Matrix, that last page of New York Magazine. Guess what? It's coming to the screen, and we have the host and the editor of New York Magazine joining me in the studio. That's in 1 minute.